Hi, Linz.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Bagel. So there's something I'd love to do today that I think is fun and exciting.
What would that be?
I want us to have a Moby Pod episode all about DJing for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you have on many occasions, well, many occasions expressed
a few.
An interest in learning how to DJ. And so here's what I'm thinking. I thought we could have a little tutorial, as it were, a masterclass on the history of DJing.
Cool.
Maybe talk a little bit about my own introduction to the world of DJing.
Amazing.
And then we could have a Lindsay and Bagel DJ lesson.
That sounds like the best thing ever. Bagel, we're going to learn how to DJ. You want to learn how to DJ? It's going to be so fun.
So what I've done, I prepared a little bit.
Okay.
And by preparing, I took a song that I've done with Lady Blackbird.
I love Lady Blackbird.
I love Lady Blackbird as well. So I took this song called Dark Days. I don't believe it's been released yet. So it's an unreleased track that I've done with Lady Blackbird. And I broke it down to like an a cappella and some different instrumentals. And so I thought it could be interesting to sort of like make a, what do the kids call them?
A mashup?
Mashup, sure. So we're going to make sort of a little bit of
like
a mashup.
Like a Girl Talk style mashup?
Exactly. That's what we're going to do is like take some instrumentals and then Lady Blackbird's vocals on top of it from this song, Dark Days.
Cool.
That sounds okay?
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Okay, anything else before we dive in to my hopefully not pedantic history of DJing?
But also, I don't know anything about the history of DJing, so I don't think it would be pedantic.
Remember who you're talking to.
Like, good point. Yes.
I don't know that there is a subject matter on the planet that I wouldn't. I could be pedantic about my ability to be pedantic.
I mean, that is a gift in and of itself.
A gift, a curse, function of insecurity and inbreeding.
No, that sounds like a really comprehensive table of contents, so to speak.
Okay, so should I start?
Yes, please, because I love history that's so meaningful, but also so very recent, you know?
And one of the things that I find really fascinating about the world of DJ culture, and at some point we should do an episode about electronic music, because that's also a really fascinating, strange history.
Mm-hmm.
So, but DJing, what's so interesting is it's utilitarian. Like it's basically, it was never a bunch of people trying to invent something new. It was just necessity being the mother of invention.
Right.
So are you ready for our trip back into the history of DJing? So it started, as far as I can tell, almost in World War II.
World War II DJs?
Yeah, so in World War II in the UK, vinyl was relatively new. You know, vinyl had been invented, I guess, by Thomas Edison.
Cool new technology on the scene.
Yeah, so recorded music, you know, up until really late 19th century, early 20th century, recorded music, practically speaking, didn't exist. And then vinyl, the gramophone, was invented. And up until that point, in the mid-20th century, World War II era, if you wanted music for a party, if you wanted music for a concert, for dancing, for whatever, it had to be played live. But the thing is, live music was expensive and it required a lot of people and equipment and all sorts of things. And so the story that I heard is that during World War II in the UK and London and Birmingham and other places, people were going into bomb shelters. And obviously, you couldn't have a band in a bomb shelter.
That would be weird.
Maybe they did. Maybe they tried. But what you could do is bring turntables down. And apparently, people had to spend a lot of time in bomb shelters. So they're way underground. They're in a bomb shelter. There isn't much power, but there was enough power for turntables.
Whoa, in a bomb shelter. That's really cool.
But it was because people wanted to hear their favorite songs, but they couldn't afford to hire a band. And so someone was like, well, let's just play the record and jump around. That's fun.
The smooth transitions back and forth from table to table.
I don't know how smooth they were. It might have just been like, play a record, stop it. Play the next record, stop it. Play the next record, stop it. And then here's where it starts to get interesting from my perspective. Although maybe 1943 bomb shelter DJing is pretty interesting.
It's pretty interesting.
So in 1953, there was a bar in Paris called the Whiskey a Go-Go. And the woman who ran it was this woman named Regine. I love the fact that modern DJing was essentially invented by a woman. So Regine was the first nightclub DJ in a way that we might recognize today. You know, like playing in a discotheque. And you know why they're called discotheque, why it was called disco music, etc.
Because the disc goes?
They played discos. Like, so,
oh,
so
the, discos so is the word. You know,
so they would have a sign out front to differentiate it from where a band was, and it just said discos, and that just meant we play records here. We don't have a band.
Oh, yeah. That's so fun.
So she, Regine, started playing discos and started playing dance music. She kind of invented dance music in 1953.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then let's go across the Atlantic Ocean. And you know where we're going to go?
New York?
Not New York, not yet. Further south, Jamaica.
Jamaica?
Jamaica is where a lot of modern, especially hip-hop DJing came from. And this, I think this is really fascinating. So Jamaica, they would have these street parties where they would play records. And the guy who picked the record was called the selector, because he selected the records. And then they started doing something that you might recognize. They started talking over the records, because they would have a party and they'd be like, hey, come to our party. And then they'd start rhyming. They'd be like, come to our party. We're having fun. It's the best party under the sun.
I would go to that party.
And that's how hip hop was born. That's how rapping was born. So then there was a DJ in Jamaica named Kool Herc.
And like Hercules?
Yeah. And so he came from this tradition of like someone playing a record while someone else spoke over the record. And he moved to the South Bronx and he invented hip hop.
Like Kool Herc.
Kool Herc. This, you can sort of point to this one guy who invented hip hop. Kool Herc. He brought it from Jamaica. It started in Jamaica and he brought it over.
Wow.
So at this point, we're getting into the 60s. And disco, like Regine's disco dancing culture has started to spread. So you have in Europe, they have these bars, these nightclubs where people, DJs play records. And then in the South Bronx and in Jamaica, you have DJs playing records while someone else talks on top of them. Then we're getting to the birth of disco, which I am going to give credit to a guy named David Mancuso. Mm-hmm. So David Mancuso hung out with Timothy Leary and like the psychedelic guys of the 1960s and just fell in love with dance music culture. Because he would go to these psychedelic parties where people would take LSD and dance around. And so in 1969, he started what I think of as the first disco dance club called The Loft. So we have Regine in Paris, who invented modern nightclub disco DJing. And then you have Kool Herc, who kind of took DJ culture from Jamaica and brought it to New York and sort of invented hip hop. But David Mancuso invented disco.
And disco and dance music are different, or they're the same thing?
Disco is dance music, but disco in the 70s meant something very specific. And here's where I think it becomes really interesting and subversive in a way. It was almost exclusively gay music and gay culture.
Wow.
The Loft in the 70s, it was gay. Just like 100% unapologetically gay at a time when like Stonewall was happening, where if you were gay, you got beaten up and put in jail. So disco started as this subversive gay Black Latino culture. And then it spread like wildfire, you know, with the Bee Gees, with Casey and the Sunshine Band, with Donna Summer.
The famous disco artists.
Yeah. And as it was spreading like wildfire, hip-hop started to really develop as well, with Grandmaster Flash, Grandmaster Caz, Grand Wizard Theodore, some other people like Red Alert, Mr. Magic. But hip-hop was very New York-based, as was disco music. So in the 70s, you had hip-hop in one part of the South Bronx and Queens and Brooklyn, and gay disco happening next door, basically. So by the end of the 70s, disco culture burned out.
Why?
It burned out for a bunch of reasons, some understandable and some horrifying. The understandable is it became a very easy way for people to make money very quickly and easily. So it went from being this like underground gay Black Latino music culture to being like Disco Duck. You know, right. By the end of the 70s, it had sort of become like novelty music where people were making ridiculous disco songs. But the pernicious reason it died was simply racism and homophobia. And the story that illuminates that best was when they, at Kominsky Park in Chicago, they had an anti-disco rally, I think in 1979 or 1980.
Disco demolition or something disco like demolition. That. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think that's what it was called. And they burned disco records.
In like
a stadium with like 75,000 people gathered in a stadium to burn disco records.
Why were they so mad that they wanted to burn it? Is it like when conservatives shoot up like Yeti coolers or something?
And burn books. And so on one hand, disco had become, it was ubiquitous and it was the pop music of the late 70s. So maybe there was, people were reacting to that.
Was it that it was mainstream or was it that it was gay? And
it was largely that it was gay, black, and Latino. Because here's the thing. There's an interview with a security guard who was at this disco bonfire. And he said, I looked at the records they were burning. Half were disco records and half were just black records.
Wow.
Like they were burning Bob Marley records. They were burning Marvin Gaye records. They were burning Billie Holiday records. So it was much more racism and homophobia than anything anti-disco.
Where's Kominsky Park? Chicago?
Which becomes very interesting as the history progresses. So disco, functionally speaking, it kind of ended. It had been driven underground except for... a few places it still existed, but there was one club in particular in Tribeca in New York, because at this point, Tribeca was a no man's land.
Just warehouses
and old abandoned buildings. And they opened a club there called the Paradise Garage, and it was in an old bus garage. And it was, I'm maybe overstating it, but it was sort of like the last repository of disco culture. And it's 99% gay. And this was also before AIDS had started. So it was super degenerate in good and bad ways. But it was like, it was hedonism, just straight up hedonism with disco music that you couldn't really hear anywhere else at this point because it had been killed off. And the DJ at Paradise Garage, who's become just legendary, is Larry Levan. And so Larry sort of invented, he took what David Mancuso was doing and made it even more modern in a way, like making his own remixes, et cetera. So Larry Levan's DJing at the Paradise Garage, and there was a young guy hanging out there named Frankie Knuckles. So Frankie Knuckles
is such a cool name, by the way. Yeah. Was it Knuckles because he would punch people?
Frankie was so gentle. I can't imagine him. I could imagine him like frowning at someone. Unfortunately, all these people have passed away.
Huh.
But Frankie, I got to meet Frankie because he lived down the street from a record store I used to go to.
And he was the nicest?
Oh, Frankie was so gentle. There's this wonderful picture of him with the Obamas because they were all good friends.
That's cool.
Frankie was hanging out at the Paradise Garage and for some reason, I don't fully understand, moved to Chicago. And he started DJing in Chicago at a place called The Warehouse, which became like the Paradise Garage of Chicago. And he started playing more electronic dance music. And people started describing the music he was playing as warehouse music, and then it got shortened to house music.
There it is.
So that's where house music was born.
It was Frankie Knuckles.
Frankie Knuckles
in Chicago.
There was a lot of this music around, but like Kool Herc is credited with inventing hip hop. Frankie Knuckles is credited with inventing
house music. Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. So, and then it spread. Like 1 minute house music was, you know, being played in two clubs, one in Chicago, one in New York, barely, like this is like 85, 86. And then it got discovered by the Brits and it exploded. And all of a sudden by the late 80s, it was everywhere, especially in Europe, less so in the United States, but in Europe, it just took over. Like it was top 40. It was in every radio station, every nightclub. By the end of the 80s, house music had taken over. But for now, let's say like we're in the late 80s, house music and rave culture are exploding. And then into the 90s, we started to have the world of like the superstar DJs. In the 90s, it was people like Tiesto, who's still DJing, and Pete Tong, and Sasha, and Digweed, and Paul Oakenfold, and they're all still active. But then by the late 90s into the early 2000s, into the mid 2000s, it got even more superstar-y. I mean, I remember one time I was going to Ibiza to perform, and the airport was filled with all the private planes owned by the superstar DJs.
Wow.
So,
wait, here's my question. Why were those DJs? Is it because, like, they're selling the same price tickets, but they're only one person and they have almost no overhead?
In terms of them making a lot of money?
Yeah, I guess successful musicians or successful musical acts just do.
I mean, it's kind of, the only thing I can compare it to is maybe it's like stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
Like a stand-up comedian shows up, someone hands them a microphone, they walk on stage, and they get paid as much as a band who would be touring with 30 people.
Right.
So this thing with DJs, it's like a DJ would show up with one person. Like, they don't provide the lights, they don't provide the sound. Oftentimes they're not the ones writing the music.
Yeah.
So you can show up, play music for 90 minutes and get paid as much as a band.
It's amazing.
So as a result, a lot of those DJs have made just a ridiculous amounts of money.
They've done well. Good for them.
Yeah. And another thing started happening in the early 90s, CDJs came onto the scene.
CDJs, like, in, not spinning vinyl?
Yeah, playing CDs.
In CD machines and just going back and forth between them?
Yeah. So basically they had the equivalent of turntables, but they had CD players designed for DJs. And at first, everyone hated them. Like, they were the least cool thing you could imagine. Like, 91, 92, like, no self-respecting DJ would be caught dead using a CDJ. But then something happened. Every DJ who was traveling realized records are heavy. And when you flew somewhere with your box of records, you'd be carrying this crate of vinyl that weighed as much as like a small car. Very heavy, very expensive. And if the airline lost your luggage, you can't play. And so suddenly these traveling DJs were like, well, if we put our music on CDs, it weighs nothing. We can make multiple backups. We're not carrying giant flight cases filled with vinyl. And so by the mid-90s, CDJs really started to take over. Then by the late 90s, early 2000s, only like cool underground DJs were still using vinyl. For some people, they liked the sound quality, but for other people, it was just like an old-timey cool factor. So in terms of your DJ lesson that we're going to get to at some point soon, I have a confession.
What?
And here's where I'm a little embarrassed. There's technology that started about 15 years ago, which was basically DJing with a laptop. And so most people who DJ now, they just DJ with a laptop. So there's no disc involved. It's laptop, playing music on a laptop.
Well, these have little drives, right? Is that different?
Yeah, I mean, these used to be, I know that podcasting is not visual necessarily, but the front of the CDJ still has a place where you can put
a CD in there.
You can put an old-timey CD in there.
Wow.
But they're MP3 players. And so that's what I use them for. But a lot of people, in fact, almost a majority of people now just use laptops. So here's my confession, Lindsay and Bagel. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to DJ with, I've never DJed with a laptop. So we're going to have
it old school.
I have my turntable, my Technics 1200, my DJ mixer, my CDJ. So we're going to have a little bit of an old school DJ lesson.
There's so many buttons.
But if you want to learn real contemporary modern laptop DJing, sadly, I am not the person to teach laptop DJing.
That's okay. No, I feel like all the computers do is try to replicate this. Exactly.
But they are pretty, I've seen people using them and I'm intimidated because I'm old and new things scare me. But it makes perfect sense that someone would show up with a laptop. That's it. You don't need any technology. You just, it's like you're doing Quicken and sending emails and then DJing, like one size fits all.
Yeah.
So
one stop shop.
That's my embarrassing confession, is I have never DJed with a laptop, so I don't know how to teach laptop DJing.
That's okay. This is very interesting to me. And I don't really talk about this, but I really, really love mystery buttons.
Okay.
So this is kind of heaven for me.
Oh boy. We'll definitely make sure that we take a picture of you with all the mystery buttons. Okay. There's like so many mystery buttons. Yeah. And guess what? Once we turn on the equipment.
More buttons?
More buttons, but also some of the buttons have colors behind them.
Ooh, that's really fun too. I love colors. Yeah. I'm fangirling over the buttons.
Okay. So very self-involvedly, can I tell you about my introduction to the world of DJing?
I would love that.
Okay. So I grew up when I was very young playing guitar, playing classical guitar, playing in punk rock bands, then playing drums, playing traditional instruments. And in the early 80s, I became fascinated by electronic music because you could simply do more with it. You know, a guitar is great, but it sounds like a guitar. Live drums are great. They always sound like live drums. Electronic music could be anything.
You can make the keys sound like ducks quacking.
You can do anything with it. And so in 1981, 82, I started to become really fascinated by electronic music. I was still in high school. And the other great thing about electronic music is you never had to wait for the other musicians to show up.
You could just go.
You just turn on your equipment and all of a sudden you could be a one-man band.
So cool.
So I became really interested in electronic music. And also some of my musical heroes were becoming interested in electronic music, like New Order being the perfect example, or Depeche Mode, people who'd kind of grown up in the world of punk rock and suddenly were playing with synthesizers.
It's cool.
So 1984 rolls around. I drop out of college because I'm mentally ill and I was having debilitating panic attacks. It's okay to laugh. You know, fine, laugh at my mental illness.
Well, you're laughing, and so we're making light of the mental breakdown,
I'm just
right?
Laughing because I want to cry. So 1984, I drop out of college with crippling panic attacks, and I am not doing well. Sleeping on my mom's couch, broke, and I started hanging out at a bar called The Beat. And it was this sort of punk rock dive bar in Port Chester, New York. And I hung out there so often that the owner, Tommy, felt sorry for me. And he let me start DJing there on Monday nights. And I would get paid $20 or $25 a night for 6 hours of work. My math is not great, but that's around $3.50 an hour. Playing Monday nights, on average, there would be between 5 and 10 people there. Usually just like methadone addicts sitting at the bar to stay warm while they drank cheap liquor.
Wow.
But that's where like I started learning how to DJ. And as much as I loved electronic music just became dance music.
Right.
And it was so exciting. You know, like this was, everything was new. You know, and in the early 80s or like 83, 84, it was early hip hop and then what was called industrial music. Do you know industrial music?
Like banging on pipes?
It started banging on pipes with a band called Test Department, but then it became like Front 242 and Nitzareb. The most famous industrial band would be Nine Inch Nails.
Oh.
Yeah. So Trent came from the industrial world.
Cool.
And then house music started, as we talked about earlier, and I fell in love with it. And house music morphed into techno, and I fell in love with that. And it became rave culture, and I fell in love with that. So by the late 80s, I wasn't really DJing that much anymore. I was making my own records. Mm-hmm. But it all started because I was a mentally ill college dropout, sleeping on my mom's couch, and I needed work. And nice Tom Giglio at The Beat gave me a job.
I mean, what a fortuitous mental breakdown.
Well, that's an interesting point that you've just made, Lindsay and Bagel, which is adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about this before, but like, I hate adversity. You hate adversity.
I think as human beings, we attempt to avoid suffering.
Yeah.
You know, and as any creature
we
does.
We avoid adversity in all its forms. And when it happens, we loathe it and we do our best to make it end. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can think of times in your life where you've gone through adversity, you've hated the adversity, but then in hindsight, you realize the adversity, without the adversity, you would never would have changed or you never would have learned what you needed to learn.
So true.
It's like if I had stayed at UConn, if I wasn't mentally ill, that would have been fine. Maybe I would have gotten married to my college sweetheart. I'd be living in New England. We'd be just doing normal stuff, which to be fair, is great. Normal stuff is great. But the bottoming out and dealing with mental illness, without that, I would never have left college.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, obviously, there's some adversity that is incredibly dangerous and like alters your life in a horrible way. But like, I do think that there are some things that don't kill you and they don't maim you and they send you on a path that could be so much more magical mm-hmm. than anything you had planned for.
I mean, I don't want to be glib and say that all adversity is good, but what I will say is in my life, and I think yours as well, there have been times where we've dealt with adversity and in hindsight been grateful for it. Mm-hmm. And clearly, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
But it's just something that I try and remind myself of when I'm going through like some sort of struggle, something unpleasant, some sort of adversity, just reminding myself, okay, I can't judge it too harshly because time might pass and I might be so grateful for the adversity that I hate.
Yeah. Because at the time when it was happening, you probably thought it was the worst thing ever.
Oh, I mean, like,
yeah. There's no way you could have seen that it was sending you down a path of, you know, what your life became. How could you have?
Yeah. 19 years old, sleeping on my mom's couch, broke, waking up every morning, crippled with panic attacks.
Yeah.
Like, my first thought was just panic. And it took like months and months for it to go away.
It's awful.
Meanwhile, all my friends were at like Ivy League schools, being fancy, doing college stuff, having college relationships. And I was hanging out at a dive bar, drinking cheap domestic beer with methadone addicts. Yeah, I gotta say, at that time, being in college and doing college stuff just seemed so delightful.
Yeah, I'm sure.
As opposed to sleeping on my mom's couch.
But you were okay.
Okay, so moving away from adversity, here's my questions for you.
Okay.
One, not to put you on the spot, why would you like to learn how to DJ?
Well, I really love music, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a fascinating skill. I have so many friends that are DJs that do DJing for fun or for work or for mm-hmm. whatever. And I want to know how it works. But also eventually I want to learn how to make my own little mixes and maybe do my own kind of mashups, you know, like put some Fleet Foxes with a little bit of, you know, Lil Uzi Vert.
Okay, so that was going to be my second question. Is like, as a DJ, what do you think you would like to play?
Well, I want to play everything. Because I love everything. Mm-hmm. And I want to find ways that they all go together. But something I recently learned is my friend was DJing a party. And I was asking them questions. And I was looking at their playlist and they were picking through songs and they were like, well, I started out at a really low BPM and I'm slowly working my way to a much faster BPM. But then they were like, but I'm going to skip one of the BPMs along the way and hopefully nobody really notices. And it was just so fascinating seeing how they had arranged their set, because that was something that I hadn't considered. I thought you could just go. I didn't get that.
Well, you can. I mean, like, traditionally, a lot of DJs will start, let's say you're a house music DJ, you'll start at 124 beats per minute and you'll end at 128 beats per minute. You know, you try and like go a little bit faster. So you like you start high, but you get higher.
Yeah. Also, the concept of beats per minute is, it's so straightforward. I love that about it.
It beats per minute.
Crazy.
But then you can also, for whatever reason, you can completely break it up. Like, you can do that. You can have like a cohesive DJ set where the energy increases and it gets faster and faster. Or for whatever weird reason, you can choose to just break that up and not do that. Did I ever tell you the weird story about one time I was DJing at the Beat in Port Chester, New York, and in the middle of a dance set, I played Hank Williams.
Did people love it?
No, everyone stopped dancing and looked at me like, what are you doing? Like, we were dancing to like New Order and now you're playing a country western song from the 50s. And then afterwards, this woman came up to me and said, why did you play that? And I was like, I don't know. I just felt like it. And she was like, I was at my brother's funeral today. That was his song.
You psychicked.
Yeah.
And you didn't even know you were doing it. That's special.
But sometimes, yeah, you can do that, just like increase the BPMs, go faster, go harder, end on a high, or you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a feeling, given that you have a very dynamic, creative spirit, I can't imagine you becoming like a conservative DJ who just sticks with one genre of music. Instead, I imagine you playing like Patsy Cline into Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Into the Indigo Girls.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to write that down. Yeah, no, I like to generally make people feel confused and unsettled. As a rule.
So DJing is for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to say, it's really, really fun to hear this history because, like, there are so many famous DJs, and I kind of never really understood the path of how it all came to be. And it's just so cool.
And I remember I guess it was 91 or 92, I was playing this amazing party at Webster Hall in New York, mm-hmm. formerly the Ritz. So there was a couple other artists on this bill, and it was a fundraiser for, I think, the Gay Men's Health Center, mm-hmm. because this was, AIDS was ravaging New York City. And so it was an AIDS fundraiser. And this one British performer who was on the bill, we were talking, and he was like, so what is this event? And I was like, oh, it's a fundraiser for an AIDS charity. And he was like, he was very homophobic, and he started swearing. And he was like, what the F am I doing here? Like, I don't want to play for those people. And I looked at him, and I had this moment. I was like, you know, you play dance music.
Right.
Being a homophobe playing dance music is like being a racist playing hip hop.
Yeah.
Dance music started, it's gay music, it's black music, it's Latino music. And I've never forgotten that. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt like a cautious respect. Like I have to be like, okay, I am a claim jumper. You know, I'm stepping into a world that involves cultural persecution, gender persecution, orientation persecution, every type of persecution that I can never understand. And so every time I play dance music or listen to dance music, I just always have to remember I am honored to be even aware of this music, let alone be a part of it. Because a lot of people might think that dance music is, especially now, it's like it's white. It's a lot of white guys. It's a lot of white people, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not where it comes from.
Yeah.
I know you know that, but I always have to remind myself.
No, it's a great clarification of honoring where these things came from. I love that.
Lastly, I actually got to DJ with David Mancuso once. So I got to be friends with Frankie Knuckles. That was a big deal. But David Mancuso, he kept moving the loft all over the place, his club. This is the man who invented disco. Mm-hmm. And he moved to Alphabet City. And I played at a party. I was like, I'm playing on his equipment. I'm playing in David Mancuso's space. It kind of felt like, I don't know, looking up and realizing you're playing guitar with Jimi Hendrix or something.
So that's so fun. Was he nice?
We didn't really talk much.
Oh, I see. But you got to have the experience.
Because there was loud music playing. Yeah, wow. I can't believe this is happening.
And you were using ear protection back then?
I started using ear protection in 1982 after seeing the Misfits at Pogo's in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I do have some tinnitus, but I imagine it would be worse if I hadn't worn.
I mean, it probably would have been terrible. I went to a jazz club in New Orleans that was amplified. And the first thing I did was get napkins and put them in my ears like you do sometimes when you don't have earplugs.
I swear by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously, if you can avoid hearing loss and tinnitus, most basic thing I've ever said, if you can avoid hurting yourself, you should probably avoid hurting yourself. Okay, ready for your DJ lesson?
Yeah, I'm so ready.
So all this stuff is equipment. So basically, the starting point that you'll hear in 1 second is roughly the downbeat of her vocal. And then also, we haven't talked about effects.
I'm going to try every effect.
Okay, so we'll play it dry. You want to play it dry?
How do I start at the beginning of the
track? It just goes back to the beginning. So that's dry. Pretty vocal. Aren't her vocals nice?
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Okay, so now let's add a little delay.
In the day. So early
man,
we had dreams. We have other spiral
on the sand, and the view
reverb
was me and you.
Isn't that fun?
So fun.
Flanger.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's vocals. Now, do you want to start playing?
Should I keep her play?
Yeah.
And now I can play the
Let me start it because it needs to be in time. Ready?
Hear the way.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
And the night is now in breach. And the rain, the dirty.
So we have her vocal playing on its own, and we also have these drums and bass playing. We can do a little fun trick over here, another effects thing, where we take some of it to change the sound of one of them. Fun, right? So now we're in a long, dark cavern. Everything's scary and strange.
Is this what you think while you're DJing?
Yeah.
It's coming back. Here it comes, people. Get ready.
can, what I'm doing there is I'm touching the platter and slowing it down so it matches the beat here.
That slows it.
Yeah. In the day. Now let's go to a different backing track, shall we?
Yeah, can I push the button? Right on the
sand. Yeah,
I'll do it at the right time.
I don't even know what this one is. Okay, do you want to push the button? Wait, hold on. Count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, you kind of want to do it on the one.
Oh.
So we'll go like, I'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you press it on the one.
Okay, okay.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hear the waves crash on the beach,
and the night is not. I like this one. And the rain, the dirty air,
fall on me. And you want to try an effect on her vocal,
yeah.
Like reverb? Just spin the little level depth. So you're DJing. Oh, you gotta push the little level depth. But her vocal has cut out, so let's go back to the beginning of her vocal. Got a nice little beat going.
So every time you stop it, it goes to the beginning.
Yeah. Ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4. So you picked this effect, which is called robot.
I did pick that. It's scary.
In the days of early May, we had. How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good. I think I'm ready.
Should we pick another backing track?
Yeah. From Shangri-La. How did you pick that? This knob?
Yeah. That's, well, so it says aka. Okay, so that's, we have, so inst one and remix one we have not used. So then you have to press that again. Now, count it off with me. 1, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Did I do it?
You did that all by yourself.
Kind of. Is now in breach.
And the rain. Do we want to do some turntable stuff?
Yes.
I don't even know what's there. So let me find something on this record.
It's very R2-D2. Good at playing the record. Down below, so
I'll fly away from the apocalypse. Ready? You want to do another one of your things?
Yes. Yeah.
Ready? Let's let her go for a second. Just because her voice is so pretty. Okay, now I'm going to. Ready? Now. So this is an instrumental. And right now there's no obvious beat, but it'll come in just a second. Ready?
Mm-hmm. There it is.
There it is. So here, do you want to play her? This changes. This is like, these are all these weird effects that affect the track. Do you want to play around with those for a second?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so just, you pick a button and spin a knob and see what happens.
It says it's space, but that doesn't really sound like space.
Here's a fun one.
Oh!
That's one that DJs use constantly.
They use it a lot.
Yeah.
Did I see how I did that?
Yep. You're doing great. I don't know what that's a weird one. I don't know why anyone would use that. This one's called Noise. Weird. It's like a storm. Like some weird, scary storm. Should we go back to the vocals?
Yeah.
Oops. Okay, but again, I changed the start point here. So we gotta figure this out a little bit. Okay, I'm gonna try something.
Faster.
We're gonna bring down this track.
Oh.
And bring up another one of the tracks.
In the day.
Maybe we'll go back to the very first one.
We had dreams.
I'll try so this filter, I'm gonna start with all the high end cut out. And you'll see it'll sound like it's playing in a different room.
Okay.
Do you wanna hit the little button? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Come on in. Come on in, drums.
Isn't that fun? It's like you can hear the kick drum, and then you slowly turn the knob and bring in.
Hear the waves crash on the beach. And the
fun, right?
Yeah.
Is now in reach.
So that's DJing.
Wow, that's really fun. You're really doing a lot, you know?
So while we're here, should I turn off the music for a second? Or maybe just let it play in the background?
Maybe turn it off.
Okay.
I love it, but
okay, so
it's distracting because I really like it and I can't listen to two things at the same time because my brain won't.
Okay, so one very interesting thing about DJing that I think is very interesting that might not be very interesting is a lot of the cool stuff was invented by accident, meaning scratching. The story is in the mid-70s, there was a guy named Grand Wizard Theodore. And you know how we talked about cue is when it lives in your headphones and no one can hear it?
Yeah.
So Grand Wizard Theodore thought he was queuing up a record, but it turns out he had the fader up so the audience could hear it. And he was trying to find the start of the record. So he's going like, and, but like, let's say like the track was playing. So he thinks he's listening to it quietly. So the track's playing and he's going,
and the people loved it.
And he's trying to find the beginning of the next song, and all he's doing is going. And the audience starts cheering. They're like, and he's like, what did I do? Because he didn't know they could hear him doing that. And that's how scratching was born.
Wow.
And then beat matching happens accidentally for a lot of DJs. Because it seems like magic, doesn't it? Like going from like one track to another track, and they are in tempo
with each other. So,
so for example, imagine you're playing this track.
Not that one. Okay,
so you're playing this nice little track and you think you've got the next run ready to go, and you're just gonna quickly move from this one into the next one. And then lo and behold, you're like, huh, I just mixed two tracks accidentally.
You mashed up.
You're like, wow, those were two tracks. So it happened to me in like 1984. I was playing a Ministry record, and I think I was mixing into Dead or Alive or Erasure or something, and all of a sudden I beat matched. Like, I mixed two songs together perfectly without trying.
Wow.
So a lot of this just happened sort of by accident.
Happy accident.
Yeah.
But here's my question. So this changes how fast
Yeah, you can also slow it down. You can slow it way down.
That's chopped and screwed. That's what they do in Houston, H-Town down.
And then you could be like, let's keep it there for a sec. Ready? Now it's all slow and...
chill vibes, man.
Everything's so slow and sleepy. So maybe this will end here.
Yeah, this is a nice way to say, go take a nap. That was a lot of information. Your brain, put your brain on ice for a minute with these cool tunes. In the day. Oh! So early May, we had dreams
right on the sand. Wow, sounds nice, slowed way down.
Kind of fun. Was me.
Maybe we'll just let this play out and we'll say our little thank yous.
Yeah, I think so. This is really nice. I'm quite enjoying it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mike Fermansky, for filming everything. Thanks, Bagel, for inspiring us in everything that we do and giving us all our good ideas. Thanks, Jonathan Nesvodba, for editing and making it everything sound good. Thank you, Lindsay, for letting me ramble on like an old person about the history of DJing.
Thank you, Moby, for bringing your amazing and really fun, interesting history of DJing and discos and record life. It was really, really fun, actually. And also thanks to Human Content, who gets this podcast out into the world.
And thank you to everybody who listens and who writes in, because we love getting your emails, well, 99% of them. And yeah, thank you, and hopefully we'll talk to you real soon, like in 2 weeks.
Yeah! We got a good one in 2 weeks. It's a surprise.
Okay.